advice is whether a person who's hired for a job will tend to be able to maintain that job. In other words, can he be fired without some form of due cause? Obviously, this again is a question of contract law, and one would expect that if the terms are spelled out sufficiently clearly in the contract, then that would determine whether or not the person has tenure or doesn't have tenure. But on the other hand, there are some general guidelines. For example, in the United States, certain judgeships above a certain level and certain professorships above a certain level seem to carry tenure as a matter of course. In Jewish history, a king not only had tenure but was able to bequeath his position to one of his heirs, a successor, and so on. So the issue is going to be to what extent the person does or does not have tenure when he's hired for a job. And we'll see that this varied over the ages, but sometimes the decision was based on what the current practice was, and sometimes the decision was made but for other considerations, and sometimes if we get to the Chatam Sofer, even in opposition to the explicit form of the contract, the Chatam Sofer declares that a rabbi always has tenure and can never be fired, no matter what it says in the contract. Okay, so that's the subject that I want to discuss. And then, if indeed we get to it, the most extreme flow labor halachot were the decisions of Rabbi Feinstein in his various marvelous decisions from a very specific pro-labor point of view in labor law. Okay, so let's get started with the source in the Gemara, the Chum Tzion. Rabbi Yosef Havalei Havu Shatla. Rabbi Yosef had I don't know whether there's a good English translation, but a man who was in charge of the trees. I call him a nursery man for lack of a better term. And the general form of that contract was that the man would take care of the trees and get a percentage, usually 50% of the produce of the trees as part of his salary. So you have an orchard, you have a man that you hire to take care of the orchard, and he gets a percentage. Shachiv, his nursery man died, v'shavek hamisha chatana, and he left five sons-in-law. Right. Omar, this is what Rabbi Yosef said, ad ha'idna chav, up until this point I only had one nursery man, hashka hamisha, and now I'm going to be troubled with five. Ado idno lo havi samcho hadadi v'lo mafsiduli. Up until this time, when I had just one nursery man, they didn't shove off the job on one another, and therefore the job got done. But now each one will say that the other guy is responsible, and there will be damage to my orchard.
First union problem.
Hashta hamisha samu adadi masidule. Amarlohu. So he said to these five sons-in-laws, "I shaklitu shabchaiku umistalkutu mutav. If you take your whatever is coming to you and leave, fine. The ilo." If you don't agree to take whatever is owed to your father and that you therefore receive as payments, fine. Otherwise, I'm going to fire you and I'm not even going to pay you what's coming to you. Okay? The Amar of Yehuda, the Itemar of Huna, the Itemar of Nachman, Hai Shatla, the Shachiv, the nursery man who dies, Yoshim Delay Mustalkin and Lahu Below Shafra. His heirs will go away without getting a payment. Volav Multi, but that's not correct. there was a nursery man, and he said to him, "Imachsidna es mafsidina mesalkana." This is cause losses to me. Fired. If Sid. And he actually did cause losses. Amar Rav Yehuda mestalik velo shapcha. He leaves with no accumulated benefit. Rav Kana amar mestalik v'shapil shapcha. Umod Rav Kana di amar I at chasidna mestalkina velo shapcha mestalik velo shapcha. But if it was explicit in the original contract that he does damage to the orchard, then he would be fired with no. With no pay, he goes without pay. Rava Amar, Asmachtahi, this is a penalty clause. Okay? Basmachta lokami, and a penalty clause is not binding. The general rule being that a penalty clause, for example, if you're a contractor and included in your building contract that if I don't finish by June 1st, I will get a $100 penalty for every day thereafter that's delayed, that is not a collectible fine, because when you agreed to that penalty clause, you were sure in your own mind that it would never come to pass, and therefore it was never a legitimate visa. Okay. And what's the difference between the case in which he says that if I don't do profit, I can I'll be fired without no help. Okay. There he is paying for the damage that he caused. Here also, whatever damage he caused to the field will be deducted from his salary, and the rest will be given to him. Runya Shatla the Rabina Hava. Runya was the nursery man for Rabina. Ifsid Salke. He fired him. So Ota Lakamei Nuraba. Amale Chazi Mar Maika Avidle. Did you see what was done to me? Amale Shapir Avid. He acted properly in firing you. Amar Halo Yitrabi. I never got any warning before being fired. Amale Lotzri Halahatot. Rava Latame, the Amar Rava, Mikri Dardaki, Shatla, Tavcha, Buumna. The Safa Mata, Kulam, Kimutrim Biom Dindam, Kola Lemilta, Kot, Seder Glohada, Kimutrim Biom Dindam. So the Gemara is saying, first, the issue was, does an employee who's being fired have access to the court saying that he was fired without even any previous warning or without cause? And the general statement, Rava says, is that certain classes of workers who are experts in a specific matter, like, and the ones that are listed are, a school teacher, a nursery man, a butcher, a bloodletter, that I assume in modern version would be doctors, and the town scribe, all of them are perpetually on warning, on notice that if they commit some error or cause loss, they can be fired without warning. So that's the basic text that we have in the Gemara for our problem, which is the one that we're discussing tonight, as to whether a person who's hired to a job has some access to tenure. Okay? The Rambam brings this halacha as hanotea ilanot lebneham dinah shehifsid. First of all, the Rambam is of the opinion that we're not talking about a private contract, that we're talking about a town nursery man. Hanot, the man who plants trees for the town and causes damage, v'chein tabach shel bnei ha'ir. Remember, in those days, a butcher would perform the shechita. So, if he actually messes up the Shemitah and causes the animal to be the Anavela. Bahamekiz Dam Shechaval, or a bloodletter who actually did physical damage. Bahsofer Shata'at Ishtarot, or the town scribe who messed up the contracts. Umlameti Nalkot Shepashabati Nalkot Veloli Meid Oli Meid Bata'ut, or the school teacher who didn't teach properly or taught incorrectly. And all similar, what's a good word for umanim? All similar professionals, where the damage cannot, is irremediable, they can be fired without warning. So the Rambam is specifically saying that this is talking about a official town appointment, that is an appointment of the tzibur, and since we want to be sure that they perform their actions properly, they're always on warning that if they cause any irremediable damage, they will be fired.
The story in the Gemara is about a private employee.
Seemingly so, but the statement of Rabbo was not necessarily about a private employee. The Rivat disagrees with the Rambam, and he says that the Hanotea Ilanot of Neir Kalaratzibor Lehem. So the Rava, who's reading the Gemara in a straightforward way, says that this applies equally well to a private nursery. Okay. Alright, so the Talmudic passage that we've just read and the Rambam's interpretation of it has been used as a source for arguing for tenor rights in public appointments. It's conceivable that what we're dealing with here is not an issue of tenor. If you'll just take Rava's statement at face value, that what we're dealing here is not necessarily tenure rights of an employee, but rather licensing rights. In other words, if you have a doctor in town, whether he's employed by the town or he's simply a doctor who's going to be serving as the medical man for all the residents of the town, a given individual might not know whether he's qualified or not. So there has to be some form of licensing, and that's the way the Netziv interprets the Gemara. That's the way the Netziv interprets the She'iltos, and that makes, to me, the most sense. However, nevertheless, this Gemara is sorted, decided throughout, and we'll go through the various centuries of citation of this Gemara as a source for the problem of whether a man is entitled to tenure or not, or whether he can complain to the court of being fired without due course. Here's some more citations from the Rambam which are relevant on the issue of tenure. In Hilchot Malachim, the Rambam writes, "Kishiyamut hamelech, o kohen gadol, o echad misha'ar hamamunim, if the king dies, or the kohen gadol, or one of the other public appointees, ma'amidim tachtav v'no o hara'ui liyosho." His position is inherited by his proper heir. And anyone who takes precedence as far as the laws of inheritance are concerned will be the first person to be appointed to that position. The Sharut Amet. Even if he sort of fills the post as far as his wisdom and piety are concerned, even though he may not be as great as his predecessor. That the kingship is inheritable. So the Rambam is now generalizing from a king to any position of authority in the community, not only does the person who has this position have tenure, but he actually can bequeath his position to his heirs. Okay?
Like a senator in Massachusetts.
Like a senator in Massachusetts, right. The Kennedys have a... Rambam is a little more explicit in Hilchot Malachim. The Rambam that we just quoted was from Hilchot Klein. That's what is the Rambam in Hilchot Malachim. Kishamamidim ha-melech. When the king is appointed. Moshchim oto b'sheman ha-mishcha. He is... smeared with the oil of an, he's anointed with the oil of the anointment. Shneimar vayikach Shmuel et tzachah et pach hashemen vayitok al roshol beyishakeh umiachav shemo shchin hamelech harei ze zocheh lo ulvanav ad olam shamalchut yirusha. The kingship is hereditary. Shneimar laman yarich yamim am amachto hu uvanav bekerav Yisrael. Heiniach ben katan, if he left the minor, meshagrim lo hamulcha ad shiigdo, kamo she'asa Yehoyada lo ya'ash. So if he leaves a minor, then he, there's, what's the technical word? A regent is appointed until he reaches majority. V'chol ho kodem b'nachala kodem l'yerusha tamulcha, and the older son takes precedence over the younger one. The loham alchut bilvad, and not only the kingship, el kol hasharot v'chol haminuyim shev Yisrael Yerushal l'vno u'l'ven b'no ad olam. So all positions of authority, what the exact definition of a position of authority isn't 100% clear, but any position of authority is hereditary. Provided that the son meets his father's level as far as wisdom and piety are concerned. If he's just as pious, to appoint him and we provide him with a tutor. L'chol mi she'ein bo yirat shamayim, but anyone who does, who is not pious, akol pi shechachmato murupa, even though he's extremely wise, ein umanim ato l'minui ben haminuyim shav Yisrael. So we do not appoint a non-religious person to any position of authority.
A lot of loopholes here.
Huh?
A lot of loopholes.
Yeah,
okay. It's the king's son.
That's what he's saying. If the king's son is as pious as his father, but not as smart, well, we appoint a tutor. But if he's not pious, if he's irreligious, then we don't appoint him at all.
That's so he just finished quoting this statement from the Torah.
Yeah, we quoted a statement saying that this was hereditary, but now he's, the Rambam is, simply modifying it. He's saying that this applies provided that the heir meets the minimum qualification of being pious, even though he may not just be as wise as his father. Fitness for the job, he doesn't expect it to be something.
He can't be fired for incompetent, right? He can be impeached.
Right. There's so much legal to decide who, how pious, is he adequately pious?
I didn't say that it was an easy job to determine, to measure someone's piety. I'm simply just reading to you what the Rambam says. There are certainly many problems with this whole formulation, or with the whole notion that positions of authority should be hereditary. Okay. Once King David was appointed to Zarcha, the Keter Malchut, Barei Malchut lo levanav hascharim ad olam, shenemar kisachay yeh nachon ad olam, velo zoche elo l'ksherim, shenemar im yishmeru banecha briti, afalpi shelo zoche elo l'ksherim, lo tikarei tamulcha mizera David l'olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hebtichu b'chach, shenemar im yazru banav torati u'mishpatai lo yelechu, ufokadeti b'shevet tish'am v'nogeim avonam. Okay, so that's the Rambam in total. As was mentioned in various people here, this is not a very applicable law. Now let's turn to actual real life cases. Okay. So We're now going to first read a lengthy Tshuva of Rashba. I guess we'll just Katavta b'din ha-chazan she'ein mesalkin oto me'umunato. There are two tshuvas of the Rashba that I want to study. First one is not so long. That a chazan, who's an employee of the congregation, cannot be fired. Ela im kein in tzavo psul. Unless there was, he was guilty of some offense. Ve'edot ve'edot ha-rayot ha-zeh yafek ha-tavta ve'yafedik takta. Ve'od shaninu ha-beperk ha-nizlakin ma'arvin ve'bayit yashan m'pnei da'kei shalom. We'll study this Mishnah in great detail in Yom Hashem next week, but a Mishnah says, in Gittin says, that if a particular house had the property that the Eruv was always placed in that house, you don't change the location of the Eruv. Ulkim lo b'gmara mishum chashada. Ve'lo miyu kol ha'gmara l'halacha v'inam yafilu l'ma'aseh b'dorot halol. So all of this Gemara is applicable. But now the Rashba says, "Aval achshav nahalgu kol hakeilot, all of the communities, l'manot anashim al tzorchei tzibur l'zman. All appointments, the public positions, are term appointments. Uvahagia hazman yetsu elu v'nitnasim acherim tachtehem. These people leave and others enter. So term limits. V'chein l'mazon v'chein." The Kupash al Tzaka, Bachain al Hamas, all public positions, whether it's the head of the town council, or head of the food to the needy, or the general charity foundation, or the taxation. Usha'ah ha-minuyim tzrichim tzibur. Bein she'novlim aleihem schar, bein she'enovlim aleihem schar. So he says the general practice is that all positions of a public appointment are term limited. Since this is the general practice, even though it wasn't explicitly listed in the appointment to this position, it's assumed that that's the agreement. Achar shenal bukein, v'haminhag k'alacha. And whatever is common practice is in fact the law. Shekol ha-dvarim tzalu otam b'minhag. All forms of contract depend upon what the general practice is. And since in all of these regions the general practice is to have all appointments to be term limited, then even if the appointment to this position, whether it's paying or not, was not term limited, it's as if it was explicitly mentioned in the contract. So this is, he's saying that since the general practice in this area of the country was to have all positions in the tzibur to be term limited, then first of all, it's as if it was explicitly written in this particular contract, even though it wasn't written. And secondly, there's no malfeasance for being fired after 3 years or whatever the term limit is, because everybody leaves a job after the term. But now I want to come to. So the implication is that, according in that part of Spain or Catalonia or wherever it was, the general practice was that all positions were term limited. So that was the short Tshuva of the Rashba. I now want to come to a very long Tshuva of the Rashba, which has a lot of pathos built into it, and which he comes to a different conclusion. Sha'alta. Ruvain Tovea Mishimon Omer Lo. Ruvain comes to Shimon and says to him, Ata hayita shaliach tzibur beit haknesset sheba uska mehayom shmoneh u'shloshim shana. You have been the chazan in the beit knesset in Aska for Kweska, I guess it's spelled H-U-E-S-C-A, for 38 years. V'achshav zakamta. Now you're getting old. You've gotten what comes out of the Shavtov and the Shavtov, you've gotten old and weak. The Ein Ata Yachol L'Shamesh B'Shlichutam Moshe Otita, no longer capable of fulfilling your duties the way you used to. V'Natata Lanu B'Mkamcha B'Mcha, and you try to put your son in your place. V'Einu Ra'ui Kol Kach L'Fi She'ein Oreiv Kolo, his voice isn't all that great. Va'ani, and I, u'miktzat anashim ha'metalolim v'beit ha'knesset ha'nizkeret, ein anu rotzim sh'yitfalel. We don't want him to take over the job of davening. Im tuchal atal yitfalel mutav, v'im lav, hikaved v'shev v'beitech. Who hasn't heard of a situation where a percentage of the shul is unhappy with the chazan and who's been davening there for many years and they want to get rid of him because they don't like his voice? This is a very typical I told you this is a potpourri of tshuvot that we've studied before. A Shiv Shimon, this is Shimon's response. Efshal shetashash mitzat kochi. It's true that I may have gotten a little weaker. Ve'eini kavdu mizikna, and my eyes have dimmed. Ve'eini yachol la'ayen v'likot b'sefer Torah k'mo shehayiti oseh, and I can no longer read the Torah like I used to be able to do so. Aval b'kol ha'inyanim acherim sh'al shliach tzibur la'sol k'kochi az kochi atah. I'm able to fulfill all of my other functions. Va'ani mafayes la'kahal ha'regilim le'palel uveit ha'knesset. I plead with the people who daven in this shul sh'ya'asu imi chesed sh'ar shnei chayai, that they treat me with kindness for the remaining years of my life, k'mo sh'asu im avotai, as they treated my parents and my forefathers. Sha'avi va'avi avi hayu shlichim bein avotai bein avoteihem kol yimei chayahem. My father was a lifelong chazan in this shul, and so was his father and forefathers. Avla lo nimtza v'shvatam, and nothing wrong was found with them. Uvni hazo ha'oved even though my son doesn't have such a fine voice, he fulfills all of the duties like my forefathers. Let my son read the Torah in my place. And let him undertake all the duties of a scribe of writing what must be written. Today shelo yavu halatakana sheyesh bidei avotam. That they should not violate the agreement that we have with our fathers. Umehem shemanu oti alehem l'shliach tzibur kol yimei chayai v'haskama uvacheyem. Ve'ein l'shum adam l'shamesh v'shum davar. בשום דבר ועניין שהוא צריך לשליח ציבור זולותי אני או מי שעשים אני במקומי כמו שמוכיח שטח התקנה. He brought forth the original contract which says that he has a lifelong appointment and nobody can replace him except with his agreement and with as it was written. Okay. וכתב רוב הקהל שהם כמו 150 my eyesight is also not there. חסדם רצונם להתנהג עמי במידת חסד ורחמים בשביל אבותיי שהיו שלוחי ציבור של אבותיהם ושלהם.
Most of the community supports me. And they brought my son to help me. And the people whom you are making a case against me on behalf of them, there are only about 10 people who oppose me. And here is the language of the original appointment. לבב מי שימנה אותו החזן הנזכר ושלא יוכל שום חזן ולא שום אדם להתמנות עליו ולא לבוא עליו בשום דבר מהדברים הנזכרים או השימוש הנזכר אלא ביצעתו ורצונו ולהשלים ולעשות כל התנאים הנזכרים לאל יחמימו בסייפה טובה ומעד כל עדת בית הכנסת.
So here you have an explicit contract saying that this person has a lifelong appointment, and not only that, they can't appoint any replacement without his agreement. Tshuva, here where there was a very explicit agreement, then the general minhag doesn't bear any role. Tshuva, hadin im Shimon shliach tzivu mikama ta'amim. The existing chazan is correct in this case for various reasons. Echad, ki shirat ha-din, mi shemitmane al ha-tzibur l'shtamesh b'fneihem b'davar min ha-dvarim, eino matne v'davke shehu m'shamesh ba'atzmo l'olam. When a person takes an appointment to a job, he doesn't mean that he has to fulfill this job 100% of the time. And if a person falls ill, for example, or a person has to leave, go out of town on business, for example, that doesn't mean that he has to be there 100% of the time. V'chein shaninu b'tosefta, misha yabalan l'rabim, safar l'rabim, nachon l'rabim, shulchan l'rabim, ve'ein sham acher elohu, ve'yi azman haregel, mu'akesh le'lech b'tosefta, yicholim la'akev al yadav ad shi'amid acher tachta.
So in other words, it's just implicit in all contracts that a person who doesn't have to fulfill the job 100% of the time. In Cain, Shliach Tzibur Zeh, Shulun Tzorich Lefrachim L'Siyu Abno, Harashut Yadav, Shemetchila Aldat Cain, Itnu Min Hastam. So this is implicit in the agreement that he would be allowed to have people help him if necessary. The old, he mitoch lashana takana nireh, shemetchilait mimino b'kach b'feirosh. Furthermore, it would seem that this was actually explicit in the original contract. Shekein katub lashana takana, ve'ein lahakahal lamanot acher la'amod l'chazan ha'nizkar v'shum davar mi'advarim nizkarim l'vad mishi maneh u'dar nizkar. ושלא יוכל שום אדם להתמנות עליו ולא אוהב עליו בשום דבר מכל הדברים הנזכרים או השימוש הנזכר אלא ביצעתו ורצונו. פשוטם של דברים אלו נראה, so therefore it's obvious שהקהל מתחילה העלו את דעתן שיהיה צריך החזן לעתים לעוזר שיעזרו ויסיינו בשימושו. Therefore it seems that even at the time of the original contract, they took into consideration the fact that he may occasionally need help. But hadin notain v'chi Allah al dat hakahal shi'ezeh omeid devorov כל ימי חייו שלא יחלה או שלא יקרן לו אחד מהם יקרה בני אדם, or some other event can occur to him which will prevent him from fulfilling his duties on occasion. ואם כל זה נו בפירוש שאפילו יצטרך לעזר לא יהיה השפישות ביד הקהל למנות אחר שיעזרנו וגם לא יהיה אלא אחר אשר לעזור מדעת עצמו אלא אותו שימנה אותו ראשונה. Therefore it was part of the original contract that he is the only one who can let him perform. וגם אם יחלה שנה או יוצא מהעיר שמה אין הציבור יכולים למנות אחר אלא מי שמעטה אותו שכן הוא ניסח התקנה. ואם חס ושלום יהיה חולה או יהיה לו לצאת לדרך שימתינו לו שנה אחת עד שיחזור מדרכו או מחוליו, ואחר השנה צאת הקהל אם ימתינו לו יותר אלא מה שיבוא לנגן איתו, ואין לקהל למנות אחר לעזר לחייב לחזן בשום דבר מדברים הנזכרים לבד מי שימנה אותו אחר המקרה. כל זה לשון התקנה. So all of this is part of the implicit contract that he has power of veto over any appointment of a substitute. נראה מתוך לשון זה שאפילו יחלה שנה, תוך שנה אין יחשרים למנות אחר לעזור, אלא אותו שימנה אותו חזן, ואותו שימנה הוא שיתמנה. נראה על פי כן, אף על פי שהעניין זה מבואה מפורש בלשון התקנה, כמו שאמרנו, אני אומר אפילו לא יהיה מבואה כל כך, אלא מסופק, כיוון שיש חרם בדבר הולכים להחמיר. Since they took upon themselves an oath to keep this man in office, we take the most stringent interpretation of that. לא להכר. ואין... Okay, all right. And finally he says, ועוד, שאפילו לא היה אב יכול לעמוד בשימושו, אם הבן ראוי לכך, אף על פי שיש אחר טוב ממנו שורת הדין שיהיה הוא קודם לכל אדם. כי לפי מה שאני רואה ממנהג אותן המקומות, from what I can tell from the practice in those towns, that is the towns around Huesca, הבנים מתמנים מדעת הציבור וחזנים תחת האבות, וגם אין האב גם זה היה אביב ואבי אביב חזנים לפי מה שכתוב במסך הטענות. וכל גדול אמור זכרונם לברכה בכל עניינים המינויים שאם היה הבן ראוי הוא קודם לכל אדם, ואפילו כהן גדול אם היה בנו ראוי אף על פי שיש אחרים גדולים ממנו או גדולים ממנו הבן קודם, שנאמר והכהן המשיח תחתיו מבניו. וכל שכן עכשיו שהאב קיים ומשמש בשימושו, אלא שצריך עזר לקצת ימים שהבן נותן שיהיה בנו קודם לכל אחר. So therefore he's making sort of three arguments or four arguments here. First of all it was the general assumption is that if you have a lifelong appointment, it doesn't mean that you're never going to get sick. So those times that you are going to get sick, you certainly will be able to have someone substitute for you and take your place, and then you come back to the job when you get well. Secondly, the explicit form of the contract was that if a person needs help because he's sick or is otherwise unable to attend to his job, he has a veto power over the appointment. And therefore, that was explicit in the contract. Thirdly, he argues that if the custom in this part of the region, as opposed to the other areas where he said that the custom was to have all appointments for term limited, here the custom is exactly the opposite, namely the position of being a chazan is in fact hereditary because they normally appoint the son of a chazan to take his place, sort of like in the yeshiva world today, where the position of being the Rosh Yeshiva is a hereditary position, either to the sons or the sons-in-law. And therefore, even without that being explicit in the contract, it should be enforceable. And finally, as the last argument, he says, he quotes basically the law that the Rambam brings, namely that in public positions, in general, you appoint the heir, the son, for example, to replace the father. So here we have two contradictory opinions of the Rashba, but of course they depend upon the local customs being different in these different portions of Spain. Okay. Here's the Shulchan Aruch. Ein mesalkin chazan me'umanato. You don't fire a chazan from his position. Ela im kein im tzapo pasul. Unless there is... And then there's a long list of what these psulim are. Kahal shenahagu l'manot anashim al tzalchei tzibur l'zman. If a community is accustomed to having appointees time limited, hazman yatsu vage hazman yatsu elu biyinach yikansu acherim tachtehem bein lachazan, bein lukupashot tzvaka, bein lashaar minu yinatsuchim l'tzibu, bein shenotnim alehem schar, bein sheinam notnim alehem schar, filu lakavu lahem zman stamam kinuf roshem miachar shenal lukach. So these two seemingly contradictory halachot in the Shulchan Aruch are basically the two positions that we saw in the Rashba. Okay, so now let's go on to some other interesting. This time the Rama. This is Rama in Yudea. If someone has. Set himself as a position of a rabbi in town. Even if he set up his own position, like on East Broadway in New York, you have a whole slew of chief rabbis, or used to in the early days. Even if someone else comes there who may be a greater scholar than he, afilu bno ben bno leolam kodrim laachirim kol zman shmamalim o kama hotehem biyira behem chachamim tzat. So long as they're as pious as their parents, then are a little bit wise. This is the Rambam. U'makom sheyesh minhag lekabel rav al zman katzuv. But in those places where the custom is to appoint a rabbi for a time limited position, all sheminhag l'v'chol v'mishi yotzu, or the community has the ability to appoint their own rabbi, harashut b'yada. Hokol shukakibur akal aleihem akol shukhen masu v'atzon ashura ein l'shum gadol b'yolom l'shtorer olav olav v'idom. So this is basically a quote from the Rivash, which we, from a long tshuva, when we studied the history of the rabbinate, there was in the time of the Rivash the whole idea that the rabbinate was becoming a professional institution, and this is basically a summary of his position as far as this relates to that. Okay, here's another 16th century tshuva from Abit, 1505 to 1585, Rabbi in Sfat and Yerushalayim. Sheila, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu Reuven Shaya Chacham Hamumne B'Kahal Echad Marvitz Torah Be'Einehem Ze Arba'im Shana. A person who was a rabbi in a town for 40 years, and now the overwhelming majority of the community were actually his students. The Yeshlo Ben Hagun, and he has a son who's fit, Lamati Yeshiva, Hachacham Hashalem, or Rabbi Yosef Kirkus, Uvi Yeshiva Hachacham Hashalem, Kohenu Yitzhak Bimolina. והחכם הנזכר מלבד שהיה עוסק בקהל הנזכר היה עליו תורך ציבור. Not only that he was teaching the community, but he bore the brunt of the responsibilities. וכשרא החכם הנזכר את עצמו שגדל עליו תורך הציבור, when the aforementioned elderly rabbi saw that the burden of the community was too great, וקצה עליו זקנה, That's a beautiful phrase. I don't know how to translate it into English. That in old age, suddenly jumped upon him, suddenly captured it. The sudden effect of old age. Mina et beno b'kahala niskar b'mkomo ze'ach 19 shana. He appointed his son as an assistant in the community for these past 19 years. B'ha minoy ha'niskar haya b'ma'amad g'dolei roshei ha'kahal. U'haskamat ha'kahal ha'niskaret, ha'niskar, u'miyoto zman li'ata den ha'niskar omeid b'minuyot b'kahal ha'niskar doresh lahem b'yom u'v'alayla b'ein potzef ha'mutzatzei agar ha'kvah. נוסף על זה שחמתנו לא רוב הקהל נזכר וקיבלו אותו עליהם חכם במקום אביב לגמרי, וזה נוסף ההסכמה החתומה. Here is the agreement that they made with the son, להיות שההלכה רווחת שכל מי שיש לו איזה מינוי, אין מלך, אין חכם, אין חזן, אין שופט, אין מועל, anybody who has a public appointment, אם יש לו בן וכל שכן אם הוא חגון, הדין הוא שיהיה בנו ובמונה תחתיו, כי ראית בספרי על פסוק למען יאריכו ימיך ימיו על ממלכתו הוא ועניו, וכמו שכתב הרמב"ם ז"ל בפרק ד' מהלכות כלי מקדש, ועל ריב"ש ז"ל בתשובותיו, ועל רשב"א ז"ל סימן שני, ולכן אנו חתומים מענה, נתרצינו רצוי גמור למנות את בן החכם הנזכר, פלוני, ממונה תחת אביו בקהל הנזכר. יקרא פסק ידרוש ויקרא פסק, he will decide laws, וידרוש בבית הכנסת שלנו בכל עת שיוצא, בין כשאלך אביו הנזכנו לארץ ישראל, טוב תיבנה ותיקרמת, etc. etc. בין שיתבקש בישיבה ומעלה לאורך ימי המלך יוסיפה, etc. etc. So they made an explicit appointment of the son. Okay. And now I guess I probably didn't copy the Okay, so in the middle of this, okay, where is that? And now, Katsat Meyakal and his Kal Shalokhat Mubahaskamo and his Karet, a portion of the community that didn't sign this appointment to the son, Ma'avarim Lomar, they complain, Kevan Shayesh Bakal and his Karet Chachu Yotel Bakimi Menu, since there is a greater scholar in the community than this. Son, she kanesim o b'kahal aniskal rotsim l'shatef o b'kahal aniskal, and they want him to be the associate rabbi, that they should to serve as associate rabbis in this community. The imlo yoklu la'asot ha'dor hazeh, and if the community doesn't agree to appoint this other man as the scholar in this community, yiftechu lahem beit ha'knesset acher, they'll open up another shul. Yemanu oto chacham aleihem, and they will appoint the second scholar on them. So again, nothing changes in this world. What happened in Newton? Dr. Rockoff, you know the events there where the shul split up into two pieces.
I've never heard of that.
This is the first time you've heard such a situation.
Shocking.
Okay. יורנו רבנו אם יכולים להכניס חכם אחר עמו בקהל הנזכר או למנות החכם אחר במקומו בקהל הנזכר וספרו כפול בית השמיים. So tell us what to do in this such a situation. And naturally he comes out in favor of the son and does not allow them to appoint another associate rabbi.
And you're putting rabbis in charge of deciding that the rabbis have friends.
All right. So, since I'm beginning to run out of time, I won't read in detail what Rabbi Tzvi says, but the summary is that he offers three arguments supporting the son of a Chacham. First of all, automatic tenure implied in the appointment to any position of authority, that was the position of the Rambam. Hereditary rights and possession, acquisition of tenure as a result of several years of service. So the point is, this guy has been doing this job for 19 years, and by the length of time of his service, he's entitled to tenure, and the community doesn't have the right to appoint someone else in this place. So there's a good, strong case for tenure, at least after a long period of service. So, but we still need some guidelines as to what constitutes a position of authority as far as tenure and hereditary rights are concerned. Rabbi Yosef Tzalon deals with a case of a chazan initially hired by a congregation with a salary, income, together with peripherals, like weddings and so on. The congregation had become impoverished, wished to eliminate the salary, leaving the chazan to draw income from the ancillary services. Rabbi Tzalon finds the chazan. He adds that even though in many communities with term appointments to public officials, it never applies to a chazan who is granted tenure. So this, in contrast to the Rashba, who says that the common practice is going to determine whether people have appointments or not, the Rabbi Yosef Tzalon, and as well the
enforcing that judgment could be difficult.
Well, it may be difficult, but people have a financial claim which may not be collectible so easily for anything. Now comes to, I would skip again because I'm beginning to run out of time, now comes a drastic change in all of this, like Tshuva v'Chatam Sofer. Shalom l'harav, Moreno av Wolf, Trev, Yoshev, Yoshevet Tachmon, I don't see what city he's in. Anochi told the Kiryat Chutzot, I'm here vacationing, Lanuach Tzat, the Tirdat HaTzibur, V'Atalmizim, Hashem Alehem, Yehu. So I'm out here on vacation. I've now heard of this terrible dispute that's taking place in your community, and your explanations of it. But Amalti, lo yuchar davar ad shuvi lebeiti. I'm not going to wait until I get back home from vacation. Kiim po eshiv davar dibur al ofanav. I'm going to give the correct response from here, Be'ezrat Hashem. Gain dan ein sifraiti. I don't have my library with me. Yehir Rava tzachal by dehava torah. May my answers be correct? The name he called Lekitovo Nikau, and now reading between the lines of your letter, it's apparent. Kilo kara kol devei igvati shebiyad harav, etc. I wrote a letter on this matter to so and so, and it's clear from reading between the lines of your letter that you didn't pay attention to what I wrote. Ki kara ki beil mimenu, the bad parts to his opponents you accepted, v'atov lo kibel. Al ken het aktiv v'shal aktiv liyado chatum b'shmi, v'lo yikoheu b'tam ha'elyon, v'shat set of keset. Don't read it in a high state of anxiety. Ki im b'tam ha'tachton, read it in a low key. Don't read it in a nice phrase. Don't read it in a high key.
It's not written in all caps.
Huh?
It's not in all caps.
Right. But read it in a low key, to the Rechachamim benachat, as the calm writing of scholars, Yimun Tzabo Tam, you'll find it good to your taste, for a little bit too far, and leaves the healing. Okay? So he's not going to blast. You can tell that he's not going to blast.
He's starting off by saying, chill out.
Right.
Something bad should
happen. Okay, so what's happened here, obviously, from the case, is that there was a rabbi in a certain town, and this young man, apparently a student of the Chatam Sofer, wanted to take over the position, and his father was a rather wealthy man and was trying to sort of buy this position for this young man and get rid of the local existing rabbi in favor of his son. And now I'm going to come to your argument. Masha katav shemetchila lo kiblu hakahal et harav rak al meshach shalosh shanim. Your claim that the appointment of the existing rabbi was only for 3 years. Ibra kainu. Certainly that is the case. V'nogib rov tzutzot Yisrael. The standard contract form for the appointment of a rabbi is for 3 years. If you look at all rabbinical appointments, they all say so-and-so is appointed for 3 years. That's what it says explicitly in the contract. Aval, the Chatam Sofer writes, Lo nishma, v'lo nirah me'olam, דאחרי כחלות זמן הנאל יולידוהו מגדולתו ומהתמנויה. But I've never heard of a case where a rabbi is forced to leave after the 3 year position. ולא נכתב הזמן אלא רב קוי איסור הנאל. אבל the only reason for putting in the 3 year term limit in the original contract was to prevent this, the employee, in this case the rabbi, for selling himself off as a slave. In other words, a person is not allowed to obligate himself to take a job for more than 3 years. But the obligation of the community extends beyond the 3 year period. Aval la'iz v'kodesh chalila v'chalila. But to have the audacity to claim that this rabbi is going to be fired after the initial 3 year period is over. Chas b'shalom. Ukipashe poskim gdulala adam, when they appoint a person to a position of highness, of authority, poskim lo ad sof kol hadorot. That appointment goes for generation and generation. Umalim b'kodesh v'lo movidi. So Necha v'chatam sofer has said, even though it's explicit in the contract that this appointment is for 3 years, that's only to protect the rabbi from the charge that he is selling his services forever. But the employer, in this case the community, is obligated to grant this man tenure immediately. So anyone, according to Chatam Sofer, and I think it's fair to say that that's now standard accepted rulings, or at least all the Ashkenazim, but they did, that if you appoint a rabbi to a position, unless there's really dire cause for firing him, that's a position for life. Even though the contract may explicitly say that this is an appointment for 3 years. So
I wonder if that's really following.
Have you ever tried to fire a rabbi?
I know it was tried here in the state in one synagogue, and he was voted. The vote was for the rabbi, but had the vote gone the other way, he would have been.
You think? Has it gone to a din Torah? I don't believe that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So these. Okay.
Interesting. I know.
Can you cut it out?
The whole thing
is around
by. He's still there.
Mikol Makom.
I guess maybe another place.
In any event, Mikol Makom, Einav Yeru Ke'en Shum Hitnatzlut L'Dechot HaRav M'Moyen Rav Avram M'Yetman Mutol Shum Ofen. There's absolutely no possibility. There's no excuse for trying to remove the existing rabbi, Rabbi Abraham, from his position. Kimah Shata'an Aviv Lefnei Plileihem. Obviously, the father then went to the non-Jewish courts to try and get rid of this rabbi. It was the case in Massachusetts also brought before the
the one I'm familiar with, the rabbi actually won.
In the court?
In the vote. But it was a close vote.
And? But would they have taken him to court?
Would he have persisted and fought it? I don't know.
I see. But in any event, in this particular case, the father of this young man went to court. that is to the non-Jewish courts, which in itself is a terrible thing to do, to try to get rid of the existing rabbi in that town. Kimasha ta'an aviv lefnei pri'lehem. Then ir kodem, that a town's a resident has preference as the rabbi over someone who's imported from out of town. In fact, the ruling is the opposite. Most communities insist that the appointment of a rabbi be someone who's not from the town. A bachelor rabbi was from out of town, was appointed to be a rabbi in town, and then he married one of the girls from the town. They wanted to be fired, and therefore could not be impartial in deciding various cases which would involve members of the town. The ein otah tshuva atah b'mchitzati ki ani chutz l'beiti. I can't cite chapter and verse of this particular tshuva because I'm here on vacation. The eich yidche hu harav amukubal kvar ad sha'al she'enenu m'bnei ya'ir. V'alminu chazal Ein Navi Lehiro. It says a person is not a prophet in his own town.
Okay. 16th century.
No, this is 19th century. This is the Chadam Sofer. Baram, he says, Nimtza Do you have B'malato Davar Tov. That you do have some good character. That you announce publicly that you don't want this job as the rabbi. Nevertheless. Lo yatzal yedecho batov hazeh, you did not fill all of your duties with that. The eighth, sha'arei katur shebachol zog lo shav mei marvit ha'am in the tot achra v'gam adav aviv lo hashir yadol nibaleya. It said you nevertheless wrote that most of the community does want you to appoint as rabbi, so your statement that you're not interested in the job doesn't ring so true. Even if the current rabbi actually resigns from position, and even if the entire community wants to now appoint you as the rabbi, Shiyad Hanafid Ansar. You certainly are not allowed to accept this position as the rabbi as long as a government official is involved in this particular case. So the Chatam Sofer, I think, could not be any stronger in this. He's really angry with the student for trying to steal somebody else's job. But more than that, he wants to keep the government out of the business of deciding who's going to be the rabbi. Okay.
I don't know what
legal documents. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the legal documents in the rabbi
contract.
I'm sure that the contracts, all contracts, are enforceable in the state of Massachusetts.
No.
Choose to go to the to the public courts. But in any event, one of the principles that the Chatam Sofer then has now established is that there is an absolute tenure in rabbinical appointments. If you appoint a rabbi for a position, even though the contract explicitly says that this is only for 3 years, that only is to protect the rabbi, but it's not to protect the he can lose if he wants, but he's not obligated to serve more than 3 years, but the community cannot fire him.
I thought an employee could always quit. Can't an employee?
An employee can always quit, but he does not want to be considered as someone who even attempts to sell himself for more than a position.
Okay.
All right. Let me skip to just simply do a little bit of quotation here. The Marsha has an interesting tshuva, which reflects more or less on what we would call banality in public positions. Mechtavohi Giyani. So this is on the Marsham. We're now talking about the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. Udvar she'elato v'dvar ha'ne'eman b'mitbachich. Slaughterhouse. I'll translate that as trustee, but I assume that it means the inspector. Umanakea, and he was also the person who either supervises or actually does the removal of the prohibited tendons from the back portions of the animal. Shahayaba kilata. Kilata. He was in your community. Uveechinit kalein. At the time of his appointment, he actually bought the position by paying 60 rubles to the prior inspector. So here you have a situation where public positions are up for sale, and this guy bought the position of being the inspector in the local slaughterhouse for 60 rubles, and part of the contract that he signed was that if he should leave, the money will be returned to him.
So it's like a taxi medallion or something. Taxi medallion, it's a license to do that.
You can interpret in a favorable way as a taxi medallion, or you can interpret it in a slightly less favorable way as some sort of
grant
in the precious little position. Uvishana sha'avav, shavak chayim l'chol chay ha'ne'eman, this guy died, v'kiblu ha'kahal ha'em ne'eman chadash, and they didn't tell him that he has to pay 60 rubles for the position. The heirs of the previous trustee came to the community and they wanted to get the 60 rubles back. And now the community wants and if not, they will hire somebody else who will actually pay that money. So that's the question. I won't bother with the answer because the question itself is a matter of interest, where you see that you can either interpret it, as Jonathan says, as a taxi medallion, or as Dr. Schwaber says, as an instance of graft. Okay. Finally, there is a rather strange tshuva of Rabbi Cook, who claims that not only is the rabbi considered to be a physician of authority and therefore has tenure, also medical officers of the congregation are considered to be tenured. So if the community appoints a medical officer, then he gets tenure. His arguments are a little bit unclear. And then I also quoted the Chazon Ish, who leaves the matter up in a slightly unsure state. Okay. Finally, I want to summarize, but not necessarily read in detail, the whole collection of tshuvot of Moshe Feinstein on the issue of workers' rights to a job. So I'm passing out the actual Shabbat for home study, but we won't read them in detail here tonight. So these are Shabbat that he wrote in the 40s and 50s. I'll read, so, for example, number 75. If one hires a worker without specifying the term, is it for an entire period that the employer needs the work or not? And here, in summary, is what it says. On the question of an owner of a factory who has a steady need for workers, and similarly one who constantly needs an assistant or a servant in his store or house, and hired a worker or a servant without specification as the term, is it for the entire period that he needs workers, i.e. permanently, or, and so the employer cannot change his mind and discharge him ever, or, since no term was specified, each day should be considered as the end of the contract, in which case the employer can discharge the employee anytime he wishes. And then he goes on to discuss this. Therefore, he says, one hires a worker for his needs, and it is not simply an obligation undertaken without a consideration. Everyone agrees that it's for the entire time that this work is to be needed, so in our case, forever. The proof to this position stems from the fact that Rava required an irretrievable loss in order to discharge a school teacher, a nursery man, a bloodletter, or a town scribe. That was the Gemara that we began this discussion with, but otherwise one could not discharge them. And one cannot say that this refers only to public employees, for 1 year was the private nurseryman of Ravina, according to most interpretations. But nevertheless, he could not be discharged without the reason of the irretrievable loss. So it is reasonable to accept my interpretation that even without any specification of term, he cannot ever discharge him, even if there is no custom not to dismiss workers, because no worker may be dismissed without due cause. Now all this holds even when there is no known custom not to discharge workers without due cause. Rather, it is based on accepted legal principles. But if there is such a custom, even if it is only the custom of this factory, or even of this employer, that is, that when they hire workers, they are not discharged without due cause, and they can work for them permanently, all my above discussion is superfluous, as it is clear and obvious that if the period of employment is not specified, it is implicit that it is an unlimited time. And this applies whether or not the custom was instituted by the town elders or by themselves, or whether the custom arose without a specific decision. It just developed that employees were not hired without due process. For this reason, in the case that came before us, of a worker in a factory where it is known that workers are not fired without due cause, I decided with the agreement of the entire court that an unspecified term of employment is as if the employment was specified to be without limitations of time, and so they cannot discharge him without cause, and hence must return him to his job. Only after it is clearly established that he is quarrelsome and interferes with the working of a factory can the administration fire him. For this is a legitimate reason. But if this is not established, they are not to be believed on their own positive claim, for he is in possession, and the burden of proof is on them to dislodge him from possession of the job, as is implied from the passage in the Jerusalem Talmud that I cited above.
Now, you an organizer? It's
not clear. Now, this here. Now, in this case, the worker's job was to attach kosher markers, and I said that they could not discharge him also from the law of tenure of positions of authority, because the position of kashrut is no less a position of authority than the position of the weights and measures are indicated from Kiddushin. But from this point of argument, they would merely not be allowed to discharge him. From the first reason given above, he has a clear case in monetary law. After firing him, they are obligated to reinstate him, and if not, to pay him his salary like any worker within the term of appointment. So he decides in a very strong fashion that you cannot fire a worker without due cause. And to establish the due cause, the worker can take you to court to claim that there was not due cause. Here's another rather angry letter to Rabbi Tikes, who did not accept, because he was a rabbi in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he apparently did not accept Rabbi Feinstein's ruling in the case of the firing of a teacher. To my dear friend, the rabbi and distinguished scholar, Rabbi Mordechai Pinchas Tikes, the chief rabbi of Elizabeth, in the matter of the Din Torah, look, After the decision of the Beit Din, the sitting of which was agreed to by both sides, and there was a prior binding agreement to bind the decision of the court, either in law or arbitration, there is no requirement that we need to spell out the details of our reasoning. That was part of the deal. Especially nowadays in this city where there is no Supreme Court which can act as a court of appeals. Hence, the decision is binding, and neither we nor any other court has the power to overturn it. It follows that they are obligated to pay him the amount decided by the court, especially since there was a contractual agreement to this effect at the conclusion of the arbitration accepting his ruling. But from your letter, I gather that the request for a summary of reasoning is from your householders, who may not wish to fulfill the terms of the arbitration without my writing the details. Therefore, even though I know that you yourself are capable of explaining the halakhic basis of our arbitration, once you remove your own vested interest, after all, the decision is enforced, even if it appears to you to be difficult. Nevertheless, to be broad-minded, I'm writing a summary of the reasoning. One cannot fire this employee without cause, even if, as you wrote, they had to renew his contract every year. This is because, as I explained at length in a responsum, someone who hires a worker without specifying the term hires him for the entire period that that employee needs work. As, for example, in a factory. Similarly, in a yeshiva, it is for as long as it is in existence. They want to eliminate this based on the argument that the custom of renewing the appointment each year indicates that the contract was only for a year. But this is no argument at all, because it is known that it has not happened that an employee was fired without cause. So this is evidence is contradicted from within, and we are left with the general rule that employment is permanent. Even if the custom of the non-Jewish schools is to dismiss a teacher without cause, this has no bearing. One must follow the custom of this institution rather than the custom of the state. Furthermore, why should we fire and follow the custom of the non-Jewish schools rather than the more general custom prevalent in yeshivot in other locations, especially when the custom of a non-Jewish school is contrary to Torah law? Well, the fact that the school hours are adjusted to those of the non-Jewish schools is to attract the students, or for other reasons. There is no reason to deduce from this that the employment practices for teachers and workers should be similar. Furthermore, the practice of the non-Jewish schools is not clear. Perhaps they, in most or even all cases, do not dismiss without cause. Perhaps they dismiss for causes which would not be acceptable to a Jewish court, but still they would not fire a worker without cause. Hence, even though the contract is renewed each year, he has not lost his right to due process for dismissal. Thus, the decision that he could be dismissed was only due to the complaints that you filed against him. Therefore, if these complaints were clear and you could not remedy these defects, then even it would be only fair and just to give him some severance pay. But the complaints were not sufficiently clear-cut to justify dismissal, as some of the defects were remediable, so they would not recur. However, we did not want to keep him even if he promised that they would not recur. We decided to compromise and award him $1,500 in severance pay as stated in the agitation decision. You are right that you are not empowered by the householders. But when we asked you, you said your congruence rely on you for all matters relating to the yeshiva, so you are authorized in this matter as well. You can explain to them in a way that they will understand that they must abide by the decision and tell them that the decision is in force and no court in the world can change it, not even this court. I am sure that the children of Israel will not commit sin and that they are all law-abiding even if they don't understand the decision in their own minds. So they have a court to rely on, and our court did not consist of merely wood gatherers, but was an expert court, completely free of any self-interest.
Coming to a school that runs out of money, can't let teachers go.
He has a number of decisions of what to do with a general employer who is in difficult times and has to fire some employees. He first rejects the idea of last in, first out. His solution is timeshare. That if the situation is such that the employer cannot pay because of economic distress, then the best solution is to have the employees stay on the job, but share the loss by working less. So, in number 77, he reiterates the fact that a teacher cannot be dismissed without due process. He goes so far as to suggest that even if the contract explicitly states that a teacher in yeshiva can be dismissed without due process, This clause may not be valid because the yeshiva is not a private institution, but rather its trustees are elected to follow the dictates of the Torah, and since dismissal without cause is contrary to our teaching, the trustees have no authorization to introduce such a stipulation. So even an explicit contract saying that the guy can be fired runs contrary to public interest, and therefore they cannot fire him. Number 7080, besides that, if a slaughterhouse was shut down for several weeks and then reopened in the same place, the workers with a reorganized ownership, the workers do not lose their tenure rights. And in number 81, he takes up the issue of loss of jobs in times of economic distress. He comes down against the principle of last in, first out, but prefers some form of work sharing, either in actual time or in a scheme of mutual compensation. His whole discussion is permeated with the view that the right to work is a form of property right, and therefore it goes beyond the issue of contract law and can supervene even explicit contracts. And so also number 47, which I all very much in favor of labor rights, as probably was the typical Jewish point of view in the 30s, 40s, and 50s of the last century. Many years ago, I was asked by the Jewish Labor Committee to write a book on Jewish labor law. So I wrote them a sample of a few pages, which they distributed to various lawyers, and all of the lawyers were really enthusiastic about this project. And then the head of the Jewish Labor Committee said, well, would you be willing to pay $25 in advance for a book, in other words, to get a subscription so that the book could be published? And none of them wanted to shell out any money. So that was the end of that project. However, I did have a lot of interaction with the Jewish Labor Committee, so I had a lot of input into this article. You can see that I'm quoted several times, but basically I had a lot more than just of input into this quotation. So this is an article from the Jewish Labor Committee. At the end of the article, I believe I translated it, I don't know now, know for sure, is another tshuva of the Moshe Feinstein dealing with the right to strike, which also comes out in favor of the employees on this map. So, as you can see, he's willing to go far beyond the traditional issues of tender rights as we saw in the earlier sources. And God bless him. I mean, he's just an absolutely marvelous person. And from this one, I must say that I agree with him. Okay, so that will end here. Next week in Yirtzeh Hashem, I want to take up another matter which is maybe even more troublesome than the firing of trying to fire a rabbi, and that is the issue of chazakah b'mitzvot. In other words, we discussed this 4 or 5 years ago, but as I warned you, this is sort of a potpourri of various things. The issue is, a certain man has been getting the Haftorah, say, the Haftorah of Yonah for the last 5 or 6 years, and now somebody else comes in and wants the job and is willing to pay more for it. Can the person be displaced? This is a problem which every rabbi in every community has to deal with practically all the time. To what extent are honors,
or squatters' rights,
are there property rights associated with community honors? So this will be the last topic Yirtzeh Hashem will discuss, which will be next week. Okay.